I'm nervous, sorry. Thank you very much for being here. I'm happy to be here. I'm surprised you're here. It's really nice outside, but I'm glad that you came. The focus today, certainly discordant serology in cases of suspected primary syphilis from Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago, where I'm the director of the HIV-STI prevention program. But the discordancy is opposite of the discordancy that you would normally see in primary syphilis or anticipate in primary syphilis, which is non-treponemal negative and treponemal positive. We're looking at the reverse scenario. So for some background, we are a large LGBT healthcare organization in Chicago. We do a lot of syphilis testing and identify a lot of cases from that testing, from our three care sites and outreach testing. Most of it's early, 47% was primary and secondary, and almost all of it was among MSM, although for the in the example of our walk-in clinic, only about two-thirds of our walk-in testers are MSM. So we also had about 4% from trans women. And about 60% of these cases were identified by blood that was processed by the Illinois Department of Public Health state lab. Others were processed by commercial labs, those in primary care. And that's important because what we're looking at is reverse sequence syphilis screening. And the, you know, more and more labs are utilizing so-called reverse sequence syphilis testing because it offers many advantages. I think probably a lot of you are aware of those. It's automatable, and so therefore it is a lot more efficient, high throughput, lots of different advantages. And in general, treponemal tests are considered more sensitive than non-treponemal tests. And so the way that this rolled out for us was that our state lab started doing reverse sequence syphilis screening in early 2008, and they used the TrepSure EIA as the automated treponemal initial test, followed by RPR, which is then followed by FTA if the RPR is discordantly negative to the original positive EIA. And it's important to note that at Howard Brown, because we're focusing on primary syphilis, we do not have dark field capabilities. So, okay. Sorry. Oh, good. Yeah, sorry. I made a change to this, and I'm like, it's not there. It is there. One consequence of this change is a range of possible combination of results that were not previously seen. We presented on this topic here in 2010, and results from testing at Howard Brown were included in the MMWR that addressed that came out in early 2011. But again, the discrepancy that we're highlighting today is not normally seen unless you're looking for it, or unless it's being done if you're doing the test for validation. And so the first time that we saw this, and it might have just been an aberration at this point, was when they were first validating the TrepSure EIA on their end. We got a result back in late December for an HIV-positive male with no syphilis history, and it just said RPR 1 to 2 FTA reactive. We called him in for treatment, which was doxycycline due to penicillin allergy, and I got a call from the state lab saying, this is really weird, but you know, we're doing this validation and the EIA for this individual is negative. Can you talk with him further, see if there's something else going on, which I did, and get some more blood from him, which we also did. And on that repeat blood, his RPR had gone up slightly while he was on doxycycline therapy, and the EIA turned positive. Again, it might have just been an aberration, but we saw it again. And this individual, also male, also MSM, also HIV positive for some time, no syphilis history, came into primary care with an open penile lesion and was repeatedly non-reactive on RPR through commercial labs. His lesion was biopsied and positive for treponemes, and after bicillin, we thought, let's send some blood to the state lab for a test with EIA because it's very sensitive. And the result that we got back was RPR 1 to 8 FTA reactive, EIA negative. And some of that blood was sent by the state lab to the manufacturer of the EIA. They did some additional testing on it, and they called it a false negative. They did an INALIA and TREP ID, which were also both positive, and they did confirm that the optical density index reading was higher than what would normally be seen, but considered negative for this test. And so after this happened, we started looking a little bit closer, and our objectives on this presentation are to describe discordant syphilis test results among patients that we saw with primary syphilis symptoms, and then to talk a little bit about follow-up tests for some of those people. We did this by looking at our electronic medical record as well as DIS cases that were done. I should mention that Howard Brown has a clinic-based DIS program as opposed to a surveillance-based DIS program, and so typically what happens if a person is treated for syphilis, right after they pull up their pants, the DIS is going in to interview them. And so that's partially the reason why we're kind of able to identify things of this nature. The inclusion criteria, we looked at early 09 through the end of 2011 because after some of these cases in early 08, we started to request these additional serologies in earnest for everybody with possible primary syphilis. And so aside from that time range, they had to have had what was thought to be a primary syphilis lesion. So those were all evaluated by medical staff, the blood processed by the Department of Public Health lab, at least one positive serology, and no documented or reported history of syphilis. 52 patients met the inclusion criteria, and of these, the first two groups are, actually the first three groups are what you might suspect or anticipate seeing. Their original automatable treponemal test, the EIA, was positive. Most of them were also RPR positive, and the range was, you know, lower titers. We had a few that were RPR negative, but I want to look at more so these last two groups, and I can understand why some people might be suspicious of these folks actually having syphilis, although because of the symptom and the positive FTA, we called it primary syphilis and provided partner services. But what are these people? Before the EIA was being done, we would consider this to be syphilis without question. And I think another way of stating this is that of these people with possible primary syphilis, 40 out of 52 had a positive RPR, but only 28 had an equivocal or positive EIA. And none of them were EIA positive, RPR negative, FTA negative, suggesting that of these three serologies, the EIA would not be the first to turn positive in people without history. So looking closer at those 24 people, because the first two case studies I showed you were both MSM who were HIV positive, most of these were males because that's what we see at Howard Brown, MSM with syphilis, but we did have one cisgender female who had a labial lesion from our youth center. Most of these people were HIV negative because the lion's share of our walk-in testing clinic people are testing for HIV or HIV negative at the time of their visit, although a few of them are positive, a range of race ethnicities, and a range of ages, although certainly it's skewed a little younger. The last case study I'll show you happened a little bit more recently. We had a gentleman come in with genital symptoms in mid-July. And they were a little atypical, so we did an HSV culture as well and sent blood for syphilis testing. He was HIV negative at visit, and the syphilis test came back a little wonky, so we brought him in and treated him and retested him, and that blood, again, RPR went up prior, and that blood was drawn at the time of visit. The FTA turned fully reactive, and the EIA continued to be negative, and some of this blood was sent to DASH. They repeated the tests, RPR 1 to 4. The TPPA that they performed was fully reactive, and the TREPSURE EA that they did was negative. Additionally, I should say, I case managed this person. His male sex partner from early June, about 2 or 3 weeks prior to his symptoms starting, was diagnosed with early latent syphilis, which we found through partner services, and he had an RPR of 1 to 512 and an EIA that was positive. And during interview, he remembered having an anal lesion in June, so I think a pretty clear source spread analysis here. Follow-up syphilis testing was available for 11 of these 24 individuals. Four of those we threw out because their repeat visit was associated with reinfection due to reported exposure or new symptoms. Of the remaining seven, four turned EIA positive, which we did not associate with reinfection. All of them were RPR non-reactive at that time. Two of them remained EIA negative on their return screening visit, and one of them, no EIA was performed because it was a primary care visit. So there are obviously some limitations and assumptions here. Like I said, no dark fields. And no FTA was done by the IDPH lab, and both the EIA and RPR were concordantly positive, and our assumption is that it would have been reactive in all of these cases, but again, that's an assumption. My assumption personally is that of these three serologies, the FTA turns positive first, at least in our population. Findings may not be generalizable to other high morbidity populations, nor in low prevalence settings, and additional studies would certainly help, ideally complemented by dark field or PCR. In my mind, some conclusions and implications. So reverse sequence testing did not offer us enhanced ability to confirm suspected primary syphilis. In the absence of dark field, additional serologies were necessary for us to confirm our presumptive diagnosis. And all of these individuals were treated at visit because their symptoms looked like syphilis. So for their own personal health, it's not so much an issue. But I think that the possible implication is that if you have a surveillance-based system, about half of these cases would not have triggered follow-up because their blood was negative. And then they would not have gotten partner services. And then I think another implication is that if any automatable treponemal test is less sensitive during early primary syphilis, what impact does expanded reverse sequence screening have in high morbidity populations? There is a concern about occult lesions, which happen frequently, anally or vaginally. and or rectally, I should say, and some patients come in for screening with primary symptoms and don't convey to the clinician or the test counselor that they're having symptoms, and so no additional serology or treatment can be performed at that time. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, the Howard Brown DIS team, our staff, IDPH, CDPH, and the clients of Howard Brown. Thank you very much.
This paper's open for questions.
Hi.
Hi, that was fascinating.
Thank you.
And very troubling.
Yeah.
And I think the most obvious question, what did your public health lab site do about moving ahead or not with using EIA?
Well, I mean, it does offer a lot of advantages. I mean, our public health lab does a lot of testing and a lot of syphilis tests, and so I can't speak to their rationale for keeping it or, you know, deciding, you know, I can't say. I know, obviously, there was some equipment that had to be purchased to do it on their end, and, yeah, but there hasn't been any word to us from them that they're considering discontinuing it. It might be a good idea for them to look at optical density index values that are slightly above normal, even if they're considered negative, and flag those for additional testing. I suppose that could be done, but...
I'm not answering your question, am I? Commercial. Yeah. Howard Brown is a commercial lab, and you were just providing testing to the public health lab for validation?
Our primary care patients, depending on what insurance they have, there's three commercial labs that do those tests. And if they are walk-in patients at our primary site, at our youth center, or on outreach, that blood is sent to the state lab and processed by them. So it's based on what service, how you're interfacing with our services, where your blood goes.
And I assume the public health lab runs assessments for the publicly run entity clinic in Chicago?
They do.
And so they're using that routinely for that clinic? Are they using that routinely in that clinic?
At our STD clinics in Chicago. It's the state lab, so it's all of the STD clinics in the state, but yes. And from what I hear, the clinicians in the public health labs will also request additional serologies at time, but in Chicago, at least at three of the five STD sites, they can do dark field, so they have a little bit more capability of stuff at their sites. But.
And did you guys send any of those other discordant specimens on to the company?
No, we didn't. We haven't interacted with the company directly at all. That blood that was originally sent to them was sent to them by the state lab. It was left over from what they had processed.
And do you know if they did that anymore?
I don't know that they did. I don't think that they did.
Thanks. Okay. Next.
Just a quick question. Is that study under this?
I'm not sure.
The abstracts should be on the disk.
Yeah, the abstracts for some reason
are
not in
the program.
And this
is being recorded unless you declined.
No, I said okay.
Okay. So you will be able to relive the experience in the privacy of your own home.
Because many of our larger labs, you know, that we use in New Jersey, they're using that now.
Sure. Yes. And this is one automatable treponemal test. There are other companies and, you know, EIAs and CIAs. But at least with this one, at least in our population, this might be an issue for sure. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. Thank you.